Good afternoon, everybody. Hello. Hello. Thanks so much for coming. It's a really exciting week. It's a great week for Azure, a great week for Windows. I'm very happy that we all get to be a part of it. Thanks for coming out. My name is Paul Yuknovich. I'm one of the lead program managers on the Visual Studio team. My team entirely focuses on Windows Azure and on Windows Azure development and tools. So today, I'm here to talk to you about cloud services development in Windows Azure. And cloud services are really the highest availability, highest scale, most flexible compute option that we have in Windows Azure. So I'm really excited to talk to you about the overall platform. We'll actually get really hands-on. We'll stand up one of these applications. We'll know when the right time is to use cloud services. We'll learn how to federate these cloud services with other things. And you know, being on the Visual Studio team, I hope to show you a few tips and tricks that maybe you haven't seen before. So just like I mentioned, in particular, we want to give you a good platform overview. We want to go ahead and build applications. We'll also focus on the development lifecycle, really things like deployment, updates, how you work with Azure, because Azure is going to manage the application and the system for you, and then how you can really work in that life cycle. Everyday troubleshooting, I think that's one thing, maybe coming from an on-premise background that might be a little bit different with Windows Azure. We want you to really know the best ways to troubleshoot. I'm going to go over the basics today, and tomorrow there's an advanced cloud services talk, which I'd recommend because they'll go really, really deep into the deeper diagnostics and troubleshooting and debugging techniques. But all kinds of demos and all kinds of tips and tricks. So are we all in the right place today? Sound good? Excellent. All right, so let's talk about the platform. So let's think about Windows Azure and the different kinds of compute options. So when I talk about compute options, I really mean I'm building my own workloads. I'm developing service applications. And I actually have different options and different kinds of containers in Windows Azure depending on the kind of workload and the kind of service that I want to run. So if I'm working on websites, we now have the Windows Azure websites option. It's really great for, you know, think of like WordPress-style applications where you have a really good website front end, you have a database back end, you're connecting to other services. Really inexpensive, quick, easy deployment. That's really the strength of these Windows Azure websites. That is kind of the first part of our platform as a service. In the middle, I'm talking about virtual machines. And virtual machines, you might hear us talking about as infrastructure as a service. So rather than bringing your own website, you're actually bringing your entire operating system on a VM, right? And that could be a Windows Server VM. That could be even a Linux VM. Then moving all the way to the right, we have cloud services. And cloud services have some of the benefits of the other pieces, but really this lets you go the furthest. Because you get the high availability, scalable application, and it's really about N tier. We'll see that we're going to be able to break our workload into different tiers, maybe some that are very thin tiers, some that do really heavy lifting for a certain kind of workloads. And we start to go beyond maybe what we'd think of a website and get more into that real server-style application. So I could have a long-running server processing data and processing information from a queue and really do that in compute-intensive work. Could be MapReduce, could be SignalR, right? We also can make use of endpoints that each tier can expose. So you can actually have different building blocks of your own service that communicate with each other. Let's say front end that's very thin, calling into a thicker back end that's actually handling the intensive compute for you. So really, N tier is the theme for cloud services. A few other things that are really interesting. You know, virtual machines, sometimes we look at virtual machines because we want to get that really custom software, whether it's our own components, could be ActiveX, could be things that we need to register, could be agents, could be custom software. We also have the ability with cloud service to actually customize the base or the guest OS that we're going to run on. You know, it's something that we probably don't want to install something too big, but definitely we can customize that OS. And again, that makes the cloud service probably the most powerful and flexible option of all the Azure options that we have. Another really cool thing is you can federate and you can mix and match these different containers together, and we have a really good story for security, networking, and performance to ensure that these different endpoints participate and work well. Today's focus is really about cloud service. I will show you some virtual machines and really show you how you can bring those into the fold to have some really custom things like a custom database, a custom component that our cloud service will take use of. So let's take the next kind of level deep into the cloud service part of the Windows Azure platform. When I think about the cloud service, I first think about my different tiers. Here we're looking at a web role front end and a back end, which we call a worker role. And like it says, you know, the role of the web part is really to be an IIS application. It's taking incoming traffic from the customers, from the users. And we're going to offload as much work as we can, actually, to one or more worker roles. And that's where the intensive long-running compute will be. And then we can use actual foundational services of Windows Azure. Like we have the service bus service that has queuing. And that can give us a messaging mechanism so that we have highly available and durable messages that actually allow communication between the different tiers. I'd say that's the most common pattern that we see. But you know, another really common pattern is that our middle tiers and our back-end tiers, like the worker role, they can also expose endpoints. And that can be even an internal or a private endpoint that only our front ends can call. And you might have seen in the keynote, we were able to run SignalR by exposing an endpoint actually in a worker role. And that gives you the kind of idea of what you can do here. So custom servers, custom processes, long-running tasks, really good for workers. And already, we're starting to see things with Windows Azure Cloud Services that you can't see in other cloud platforms. Way over the right, we have this IaaS, or Infrastructure as a Service, virtual machine. Right? And that's a place where if we have entirely custom software or custom databases, that can be federated into this. Now, overall, the way that Windows Azure was built, it was built so that that kind of blue oval, the application, you can focus as a developer on the application. You can let Microsoft worry about everything else, worry about maintaining the tiers, worry about spinning up the tiers, worrying about keeping things highly available, worrying about fault tolerance. That's all the kinds of workloads that actually Windows Azure manages for you. That's going to save you money in the long run. Another thing, so let's talk about these roles. When I think about a role, it's the definition of a tier of my app, right? So again, we have the web role that already has IIS predefined. We have the worker role that's completely custom. You could think of that like a template or a stamp that we can stamp out on as many or as few virtual machines as we want. And that really gives us the power to scale up and scale down elastically. It also gives us the ability to have that fault tolerance so that if any one of those purple rectangles has some kind of a problem and goes down, and there's a, or for some reason it's unresponsive, Windows Azure will actually manage the system for you, and it can route traffic to a healthy role instance while it's actually spinning up and healing the role for you. So it's just, again, an idea of, you know, because we have these kind of generic definitions of your app, we can stamp them out, and if any problem happens, Windows Azure will actually build in that fault tolerance for you. And as I mentioned, to get that high availability, you actually want to have at least two instances or two VMs of each of your roles. And that way, if anyone goes down, or if you're upgrading in place your application, you always have at least one role that's up and healthy and that's taking traffic. And you can have as many as or as few as you want. And that's something that either as a developer or an operator of the service, you can change at any time. And all of this sits behind a load balancer. And that is kind of another service that you could think of Windows Azure. So whether it's HTTP, HTTPS, TCP, UDP traffic, that can come in. It'll get load balanced by the load balancer. And there's a number of agents that we have that are actually monitoring the health of your different instances and virtual machines. And the load balancer works in concert with that controller to make sure the traffic is always going to the appropriate place. So pretty cool system. Again, it's a lot of machinery that you would have to build yourself if you want to have a data center. But really, the goal is you get to focus on your application. You get to focus on the tiers of your app. That's really, as developers, what we want to do. So So we talked a lot about compute options. There's also storage options that are pretty important. Now, actually, coming back to this picture, for me to have a highly available service, it's actually important to me that I'm not writing data to any one of those virtual machines, right? Because if any one of those virtual machines goes down, the data that was on that virtual machine is gone. Or if simply my load balancer takes me to a different instance, I'm not going to see the same data. It's like working in a server farm, right? It is working in a server farm. So the important thing is that we actually use one of the well-known storage services that are provided by Windows Azure. And we have a few to talk about. So the first one is blob storage. That's a really abundant and cheap source of file storage. Great for images, media files, log files, all kinds of things like that. And it's highly available, fault tolerant. It can actually be geo-distributed for you at your option, and it can also be put into a CDN. So it's a really powerful service, and it saves you from doing all that work yourself, of having your own MIME handlers, of trying to manage the availability of storage for yourself. Second piece is table storage, and it's really intended for those simple cases where you need to store tables and entities really quickly and easily. And I'll say it's not grandma and grandpa's table storage. It's actually very NoSQL-like, which lends itself to really powerful, really large data kind of scenarios. And we actually make really heavy use of it in our own diagnostics when we get really big data produced by our applications. So that's an interesting thing for you guys to look at. And when you need to scale beyond that and you need the power of relational data, well, we have SQL databases. And you can go ahead and use the SQL database service. And it really is what you'd expect from SQL Server running in the cloud. So all of these services, as a developer, come together in the Windows Azure SDK. We release SDKs roughly 3 to 4 times a year, definitely really, really often. We actually, this week, very excited, our team got a new SDK version, a new platform version out. And when I think about the SDK, there's a few things. There's, of course, the libraries that let you work in the programming language of your choice. Today I'm going to show .NET, mainly about C#, VB, F#. But also there's a number of other languages, like there's actually Node, PHP, and it allows kind of a lot of interop between different languages to work against Windows Azure. And I didn't mention it before, but the platform is all exposed in a RESTful way. So there's a number of REST services, and these client libraries make use of the REST services to expose a better programming experience to you as a developer. And along with the SDK, you get what we talked about, the libraries. You get a compute emulator because, what I just showed you in that last picture looks an awful lot like a data center. Well, you actually need some special infrastructure on your dev machine to start up a dev center without actually deploying to Windows Azure. So we have an emulator built in, and we also have a number of dev tools. And, the premier experience is in Visual Studio. We have support for both VS 2010, SP1, and also the new VS 2012. And there's options ranging from free all the way up to Visual Studio Ultimate, where you're going to get the absolute best development lifecycle experience. You don't even have to remember all that. All you have to remember, if you don't have the SDK today, is just to go to windowsazure.com in the Developer tab. You can get the SDK of your choice. Actually, just a quick show of hands. Who's working with the Azure SDK already? Okay, that's great. Good number of hands. How many folks are working with websites? Okay, a few less people. How about virtual machines? Tried out virtual machines. Cloud services? Okay, great. So, we do have some cloud service developers in the room. We also have a lot of people who might be seeing it for the first time. So I'll make sure that there's something for all of you, whether this is brand new or whether you're actually looking for what's new in October. I won't read this to you, but talking about those releases every 3 to 4 months, I just wanted to make a list for you of all the platform tools and lifecycle features that we've added, ranging from things like virtual networking options, multiple cloud configs to target multiple environments, all kinds of NuGet package updates, simplified publish, continuous delivery, .NET Framework 4.5, and the innovation really just keeps on coming out. That's really exciting for me. I've worked on Visual Studio for about 13 years, and just to work on a cadence that's so much more rapid and where we can be in a feedback loop with you guys hear what you really need, hear what the gaps are, and be able to turn around in a few months and crank something out. That's, to me, that gets me fired up. So love that. Okay, and the slides should be available for you afterwards, so you don't have to remember all that. So if it's okay with you, we're going to close PowerPoint, probably for a while, and we're going to go do some demos and really get hands-on. Sound good? Okay. There's no other answer, by the way, so you can't say no. I'm going to do it anyway. All right. So we're in Visual Studio 2012, vibrant styling, and what we'll do, it's different choices, different tastes. So we're going to open a project, and boy, I have a lot of versions here. What I did is one of our evangelism teams has a really good MVC4 sample for photo galleries. I love it because it's restful, it's N-tier, and it lends itself to really kind of adding a lot of functionality to it. So we're going to start here. This is an actual sample that I downloaded from our sites. It's an on-premise application. And the first thing I want to show you, and you might have seen in the keynotes, are once you have the SDK installed, you can take any web app, whether that's ASP.NET, MVC, web services. You can take any of those project flavors, and you can add a cloud service project. And basically, that adds the main ingredient, the cloud service project, that you need to package and deploy this kind of a workload up into Windows Azure Cloud Services. And we treat, you know, kind of like we showed in the diagram, we treat the content of that web app project now as a web role. And we've actually kind of wired it all up. And I want to show you the anatomy a bit here. So if I drill into the roles, I can double click on the role. And what we're seeing is actually a design experience that feels like we're modeling and configuring the environment we want for this tier in Windows Azure. So that whenever it gets provisioned, it's going to be provisioned with the model that I want. Right? So we can talk about trust levels. I showed you all those purple squares where we get one virtual machine, you know, 1,000 virtual machines. I can simply go from 1 to 2 here, and that's how I reconfigure the number of instances I want to run on. Visual Studio is going to respond to that. Also, I can choose how much hardware I want, how much RAM, how much networking, how beefy are my processors. And I can do that by using VM size. If you forget sort of what the specs of the machine are, Visual Studio will link to it. And you can see the up-to-date specs on the machine. You can kind of cross-reference that with pricing. I really love this, actually. You can, in this new site, I can go to Cloud Services, let's say, go to a small role, and I can just basically move the dial on, okay, I have 2 instances. I need some geo-redundant storage, maybe not quite that much. Start here, right? And I can pretty quickly model, hey, for an N-tier service that I'm going to run, I can actually see very quickly and in a very straightforward way what the cost could be per month. So one of the goals we had with the platform is to demystify what the costs will be and give you the tools that you need to kind of calculate and estimate what might happen. All right, so coming back to development, so we talked about this role designer. I mean, there's tons of goodies in here. There's places where you can create settings, and you can define settings for one or more environments. By default, we kind of think about your local development environment. We think about the remote cloud environment. In reality, you can make the scale to all the different environments you guys really work in. I see a lot. There's test environments, pre-production, production, LKG, all those kind of branches. And we can really scale to that and let you basically swap out config so that you're not creating multiple solutions just to kind of work around and manage those different configurations. This design time works over platform assets. So every cloud service application has the CSDEF file. This is really the model or the definition of your application tier. And I can see for this particular role, right, I have a web role. I can see that the endpoint is modeled on port 80. I could put it on any port that I want to. I could make it an internal private port, or I could make it a public port. And we talked about OS customization. We have hooks to have very well-known plugins or modules like Diagnostics, IntelliTrace, Profilers, all kinds of modules that can kind of sit on top of the operating system and actually perform more work for you. We'll also talk about later, you have the ability to do your own custom startup tasks where you can run arbitrary scripts that will affect the software on the machine, even talk to web platform installer and pull down machine software dynamically. So that's the CS Def. And then, kind of like we talked about, there's multiple configurations. Well, those all live in these CSCFG files. Any changes you make in here are configurable not only by you as a developer, but they're configurable by anybody in an ops role just using the Windows Azure portal, right? So you can use the complete web UI, no dev changes, no republishes. It's really meant to be reconfigured on the fly. So, however, with the CS Def, any changes I make in there does require a redeployment or a publish update so that we can actually remodel and reprovision your application according to what you asked for. All right. So we talked about this packaging deployment project. And because it's the startup project, I won't just start in IIS Express. I'm actually going to launch a Windows Azure emulator. And the emulator will figure out how many instances I need. And it'll spin up, it'll kind of simulate spinning up multiple instances and allow that networking behavior to happen between each of the tiers. To have this be kind of a more honest-to-goodness thing, let's actually add another tier. So we'll add a worker role. Oops. Go ahead and add that. And let's look at the instances. So let's come up here. We'll give this one 2. We'll give this one 2. That gives us the high availability. And we'll hit F5. Again, that Azure project is actually going to coordinate all the different roles. It'll spin up the network that I need. And it'll stand up effectively a data center on my poor little laptop here. So you guys can actually see what the app is. It's really simple, just a photo gallery. All right. And the idea here is that my photo gallery MVC controller is fetching data. Right now it's fetching data from a mock. And I want to expand on this and actually do some interesting work in my worker role that you know shouldn't be handled by the front end if I want the front end to scale. Another thing let's take a note of is if we look into the tray and right click, I have both a compute and a storage emulator running. So basically I'm standing up my own simulated compute container, my own simulated storage service that does blobs, queues, and tables. And you know, I can do all of this work completely on my local machine without paying or taking the time to push that to Windows Azure. Let's open the emulator UI. And this is really handy to get a feel for what's going on. So in my N-tier app, I can see here's my front-end workload, here's my back-end workload. I can poke in. I can see I actually have 2 virtual machines or 2 instances. I can pick any one particular thing, and I can actually see the console debug trace in real time, which is really handy to kind of diagnose what's going on. And in this phase of development, we're really focused on that kind of unit testing and just getting our own functionality working. At a later point, we'll focus on the integration testing with Windows Azure. So far, so good? All right, so let's do something a little bit more interesting. What I want to do is I want to have my photo gallery and my worker role talking to a few different services. First, I want my photo gallery, rather than talking to a mock, I want it actually talking to a data web service. And in my case, my company has already made a bet on a different database provider. It's actually based on Mongo, and it's running in a virtual machine, and I want to connect that into my app. Then what I want to do is when customers are uploading images to the gallery, I actually want a bunch of work and a bunch of processing to happen. For example, I want to compress images. I want to create really cool mosaics. I want to fire off some back-end cleanup work, right? And that's going to really lend itself to a worker role. It's going to do the heavy lifting, actually, for my front end. So let's dig into that a bit. First thing I mention is I did kind of a cheat where I programmed this MVC application, or the team who built it, programmed it against a mock, right? And this is basically just a JSON response that's coming back from a controller. It's as if I'm calling a REST-based web service, it's giving me a response back. And that's referring to files. And this is done the on-premise way, right? So that the photos are actually living on disk in a folder in IIS. It's kind of a no-no, right? Like we mentioned, we can have traffic going to arbitrary instances, and we don't want to be saving data to disk. We don't want to be looking at stuff from a mock. So let's actually make this much more real. So the first thing I'm going to do is get these same blobs, the same test data. I'm going to put them into blob storage service. We're going to plumb that through, and then we're going to expose this JSON data actually from a real data source coming from a VM. So let's start to use some of the tools that we have. Something brand new that we actually added this week is the, actually I want to start from scratch, I can show you, is the Storage Explorer, which is a part of the Server Explorer tool. You know, basically what you can do is you can visualize your local simulated storage or any storage account that lives in Windows Azure. All you need to do is add a new storage account. When Visual Studio knows about your subscription, which you're just a click away by importing a file, I can look into your subscription. You can pick any storage account and go ahead and add it. No more trips to the portal. No more figuring out what the account keys are. Just click it and forget it. Then we can enumerate into our storage account. I can see those different services of Windows Azure Storage, blobs, queues, and tables. I can drill into the containers, you know, and think about blobs like an overall set of directories, and I can view the files in those directories. And what I want to do is let's create a new container, and I have the tools I need in Visual Studio just to kind of get this going. So I could say photos. And this will actually correspond to real REST DNS addresses, so we'll actually validate it and make sure it's available on the internet, right? Go ahead and create that. And now I have an empty blob container or an empty folder. I don't have any data in it. But now these tools are all read-write. So I can just simply I can hit the upload button. Let's actually find where these files are. So should be in here. We can even multi-select. So I'll just grab all those files. I'll hit upload. And asynchronously, as a background job, the tool will upload them all for you right into your storage account. And then I kind of mentioned that the storage service is RESTful. So you can already see that I have just a normal standard HTTP URL that addresses into each of my storage files. And I'm getting additional metadata like content types, property bags, and things like that, the size. And I can very quickly kind of inspect what's in here. So now I've basically put the data in that's going to make my application run. My mock file refers to these images by relative path. So far, I'm still OK. But what I need to do is go into my view, because my view is assuming that we can look up the server path. But what I actually want to do is get this kind of RESTful internet path. So we can just use Server Explorer again and pop back to code. And we'll change the path here. All right, so now it's a real path on Azure. Fix up this description URL too. And now the mock should actually supply images that are coming from the internet. So let's hit F5 and see how my coding skills were. And actually, when I'm hitting F5, I'm starting up 4 application instances, because that's the 4 tiers of my app. Oh, if this ever happens to you, it's either a good or a bad thing. When a particular file has context, right? It's going to try to F5 that actual path. We just want to get to the root. So sometimes I forget and I do that. All right. And now, when I look in the path, I'm actually seeing that it's coming for real from Windows Azure. All right? And this is kind of the read-only scenario, and I can use the APIs actually to push images up. I can download them in pages. I can download them in blocks. I can do things very asynchronously and in chunks. So we have a lot of machinery that's kind of available to you to work with really big files in kind of more scalable scenarios. Also, if I want to lock down my data, just to kind of talk about that, the overall container has some access rules. So by default, these images are not accessible to public requests. They're only available to me if I'm authenticated with signed access keys or signatures. But what I can also do is I can, at any granularity, either the entire container or individual blobs, I can kind of ACLe them and open them up or lock them down as I choose. And that's just a really good feature of the storage service. All right. So I think we did step one. We moved the data part of our application actually into Windows Azure. So now this thing is absolutely, truly stateless, and it's not writing to disk. Well, other than pulling from my mock file. Next, what I want to do is, rather than pull from this JSON file, which I think is a little bit goofy, I actually want to pull that from an endpoint that's sitting on a virtual machine. One tip and trick is we actually have a Windows Azure Virtual Machines node, also in Server Explorer. We can see into your subscription. We can enumerate all of your IaaS VMs. And we can actually show you the endpoints that you can call from your application. So here, I can see I have several virtual machines. The data one is the one I'm interested in. It's running Mongo, and it's got an RDP endpoint. And I can even see the port that's available to me here. And so I can go ahead and lift this URL. And let's go ahead and drop that into config. So when I want to add a setting that I can look up dynamically, I open up the role designer. I go to the settings tab. Let's get this out of the way. We'll add a setting. We'll just call it connection. And I can paste it right in. And if I'm using Mongo, I think that's the prefix. Right? It's very simple. Basically, it's just the REST endpoint that I want to call here, or just the service endpoint that I want to call. And now I'll come back to my controller, since it's an MVC application. So we'll go in the controllers. I have the simplistic code that gets the data response and supplies it to the views. And rather than getting that from a file, I actually want to connect to Mongo, and I want to get it from there. So what I can do is we'll add a NuGet package, kind of like a reference on steroids. We'll go online, and we'll search for Mongo. TenGen has a nice driver. Looks like I've already added it. Looks good. It's not showing up in the install package. Let's try that one more time. Where's the install button? There's a glitch on this resolution. Okay, I guess I have it. It just wasn't really saying it was installed. Okay, cool. We won't worry about that. So now what I can do is import those namespaces. I can jump into my controller. Let's add a few actions. These are also kind of RESTful. So I have one action in the controller that will basically query data. It looks a lot like link, getting photo entities, getting a list of them, finding the ones that I want to look for, excluding the ID hidden field, because that'll look like junk to my UI, changing that to a list and returning it from my controller. Also, if I don't have any data whatsoever in the MongoDB service, I have a method that just can shove some data in. And then the last step is, rather than returning just the file action, what we want to do is return the content that's coming back from the service. And so we'll call our query data function, and we'll return that as the content of the controller action. All right, and now what we'll do is we'll run it. What did I forget? Oh, the connection? Aha. It's looking for this connection variable, so let's go ahead and define that. And we have a really cool set of APIs now. So if I say, Cloud Configuration Manager. Actually, can I do it as a var? Let's just do it as a string. All right. And this is an API that's really smart because it can look into web config or it can look into the cloud config, whichever domain is present, and it'll return the setting from the right place. And it'll start with the cloud config because that's the one that's preferable, most configurable post-deployment, and it can revert back to app config or web config. Now it should have F5, and that'll work. And now it's returning data actually from the internet, from my other virtual machine. And if you want to keep me honest, you can see there's RDP enabled. So I can actually, right from Visual Studio, I can connect via remote desktop right over the internet. That's a feature that's built into IaaS virtual machines. We need a little music right now. There we go. While we're doing that, I'll just I'll also show you. This is the Windows Azure Management Portal, which is manage.windowsazure.com. And I can see the cloud services, and I can also see the virtual machines. And I have the same capabilities to configure the networking and connect via remote desktop through the web portal. I think it's kind of fun to do it from Visual Studio. And the thing is, you can see actually the keep alives, and you can see the connections coming from the client. So this is actually the real deal. We could do another request. Where's our web page? Right? And you can start to see that the remote desktop plus IaaS is a really good way to start doing these lightweight diagnostics and make sure that things are really working the way you want. So pretty cool, using cloud services, virtual machines already. Last thing I want to do, if I still kind of look at this, we made a pretty expensive website, but we haven't done anything that feels like a good server workload. So let's build out that worker role, and let's do some heavy lifting work that doesn't really lend itself that well to that front-end web role. So we'll open up the worker role. And I think the easiest thing that I could show, just for the sake of time, is compressing images. So what we'll do is we'll take images that are coming in from a queue, right? Queue is the way that we'll send messages from the web role to the worker role. I'm going to take the URL that's in that queue. That's my signal to actually go do some work on the blob. So we're going to download that blob. We're going to operate on the blob, do compression, do cool, algorithms on it, and then we'll save it back up to the cloud as a blob, and then we'll be done. And you can imagine there's a lot of workloads that I can do in here way beyond that. We'll kind of start there. So the first thing I want to do, let's make sure that we have all the references and things that we need. I actually want to take advantage of the new storage libraries. So there's a storage 2.0 library. Has a ton of new features like copy blobs and better stream support. Just really great stuff that you guys need to check out. So we'll add a NuGet package. I can go to recent. I can see there's Windows Azure Storage 2.0. We'll go ahead and install that. We'll sign our life away in the EULA. Just kidding. And then we will, you'll see actually I got a little squiggly here. There actually are a few changes to namespaces that will require some code changes. So you'll actually notice that by default we don't upgrade your references to storage 2.0 if you're upgrading from a previous version. We give you the option to opt in instead for the new library, if that's what you want to take advantage of. We kind of feel like keeping you guys safe is the right default. You choose when you want the features. You're probably going to want them, so. Is that a good trade-off? We should keep doing stuff like that? Good. Heads nodding. All right, so this namespace actually is a lot nicer to work with, though. So we've got some storage imports. Let's actually bring in some drawing imports. Let's add a reference to the drawing namespace so we can do that image compression work. Here we go. All right. And let's add some class level variables to our worker role. And again, this, you know, for those of you who've done Windows Server programming, like Windows services, this is going to look entirely familiar, right? There's the service is kind of headless. There's a startup event, and once the service is started and you've initialized it, it's just in a run loop, and you decide when you're going to process and how you're going to process what you'll run, right? So what we'll do is we'll add some class level variables. Really nice thing, the way this is done. Everything kind of starts with a cloud prefix. It's really easy to find in IntelliSense. We'll go to the start method. We'll initialize the queue. We'll initialize blob storage, so you don't need to see me type. And if you kind of forget which containers you want to work with, just take a peek in Server Explorer, and you can kind of match things up, and you can create containers if they don't exist. You can also use APIs to check if the container exists. If not, create it. And that'll actually kind of bulletproof your code a little bit. Probably an even better practice is all of these container names that are strings, so I'd actually put them in config so I can move these things around. For the sake of time, we won't do that. We'll go up to the run loop, and I'm going to completely change this. So let's make that full screen so you can see it. So in the run loop, what we'll do, kind of like we mentioned, we're going to get the image URL from the queue. We're going to take that URL and use it to download it from block blob storage. So here's the name. We're going to go ahead and download it to a stream. It's kind of stream-based. I have a function that actually does the heavy lifting in this worker role, which does the compression. When that workload's done, I'm going to take the same data and I'm going to upload it back, right? So it's pretty kind of indicative of the kind of thing you would do. Heavy lifting, put it back up in storage, and you're done. And you can see this is a pretty simple method that does the compression. You guys will have the logic that only you can write that actually does the work you want to do. And let's bring it all together. So we'll hit F5. We're going to stand up the web and worker roles. Now, I have features in the photo gallery that actually upload images, but as a developer, if I want to do a shortcut, at least we fast fail. We give you good validation, right? So come to the worker role. It's telling me I forgot this connection string. Note that in these settings, we now have a connection string type. Hit dot, dot, dot. That same easy picker that can look into your subscription, you can use that here. Pick your storage account. We'll figure out the connection string for you. We'll put it right into your app. You're done. We do it in a safe way. Try it again. All right. So the app is running. Let's get this simulator going so we can see that it's working. And just to kind of shortcut things, I'll use the Storage Explorer with queues, and I'm going to put image URLs right into the queue directly. So let's grab one of these image guys. How about this one's a little larger, 23K. It could use some compression. So we'll lift the URL. We'll come to the image message queue. From this UI, I can see what's in the queue. I can even add messages right on the fly. Boom. And you can see when I hit refresh, it was already picked up by the worker role. If I look at the actual worker role, I can see that it did the work and it compressed the image. And when I come back to my blob storage, I should see it got compressed, right? So pretty cool. You can start to see that you know, all parts of the app, all tiers of the app are working together and kind of giving me that scalable experience. And if we even want to drill into it more, you can see which instance actually picked up the URL. It was instance zero that did it. So that was kind of that load balancer kicking in. It delegated work to the first instance. The second one was there for availability. All right. And so we built a pretty complete app. There's one more thing that I think I hear developers and businesses do a lot, which is you need to actually still customize the OS. There's some kind of agent. There's some kind of control that you guys have, some kind of customization you need on that guest OS to make your software run. So I just want to point out a feature we have called startup tasks. What you can do is you can open up the CSDEF file. You actually need to drop to XML and work directly with the platform here. But I can write it anywhere in here at the top level. I can add an element. And basically, I'm going to point to some kind of a batch file or some kind of a script file. I can even use the sys internals to do more sophisticated invocation of code. And I have a number of options, like do I want to run as normal user or do I want to run elevated as the system account? I can even do things like specify this task type. And do I want to run simple or foreground, where basically the startup task needs to run before my app runs? Or do I want to just let it be in the background and whenever it's ready, that's fine? And again, this is really good for installing software, doing custom configuration, hitting web platform installer. Let's add a script to kind of check it out. And this is a feature that almost no one knows about, so you're going to have to make them pay you money for this. All right. So we'll go to the role. And for any role, you can add folders and you can add items. And what that actually means is we'll package up any arbitrary files that you guys have, like script files, and we'll deploy it into the guest in the folder that you guys specify, in every guest. And it saves the burdens of setting the output folders and trying to do all that guesswork. We'll just put it there for you. So it's actually pretty cool. So we'll add a bin folder, because we want to put files in the approot/bin. That's actually where we look for startup tasks. And we'll add a file. All right. Actually, we don't want a new one. We'll add an existing one. I think I put it on the desktop. And here's my script file. In this case, I chose a script file that basically will install classic ASP. So I have some workload, some things in my front end that actually use kind of my legacy classic ASP. That's no problem. I can customize IIS on the machine using the startup task, and I can actually run that custom software. A best practice, since these startup tasks can fail and they're not really managed directly by Windows Azure, is to pipe the output of that task to some kind of a log file. And that way, if you ever have to, if there's a problem, you can RDP into your instance, look at that log file, and just kind of see what happened. I definitely recommend that. And there's some other tips and tricks where RDP, if you kind of do things in background mode, RDP, the RDP module won't be installed into the guest before your startup task runs. So you can actually force your startup task to kind of stop after it's done, which will give you a hook to see what happened and then kind of let the application go. So those are just a few debugging techniques with startup tasks. And if I hit F5, our simulator, as well as the real Windows Azure host, will actually invoke the startup task and actually customize the software. All right. Most standard thing is on your dev machine, you're going to have the right prereqs anyway, but it's more important for putting it up on Azure, obviously. Okay, so what I want to do now, we built an app. It's getting pretty nifty. I'm going to right-click, and we'll publish it to Azure. And this is a place we've really overhauled. You used to need to know about certificates and all kinds of stuff like that. Now you can download a file that has a base64 encoding of the certificate. You can import that, and you're into Azure. It's basically your certificate that lets you talk to the service management side of Windows Azure. And because of that, your Visual Studio tools, your PowerShell tools, everything will be really connected and really alive when working with Azure. So like when I click Next, I can pick different containers to deploy into, different cloud service containers. I can create a new one on the fly. Actually, let's do lowercase. I can choose the data center, so we'll do West US. Note one thing is we don't do the anywhere data centers anymore because it's actually, we've heard from you guys, it's better to really know which data center you're deploying to, so there's no mysterious latency or different behavior. So that was based on your feedback. We'll hit OK. And then I can choose the configuration file, right? So I might have some different test, pre-production, production config. I can enable remote desktop. This will install remote desktop into all my roles. Just simply type in a username, password. In my case, it has to be strong enough. Hit OK. You can install web deploy into your role. So for any instance, you can just web deploy a quick little change, like a content file. That's really handy. And then you can do things that with Visual Studio Ultimate, like you can deploy the actual IntelliTrace agent, which when you ask for it to, will instrument any exceptions, any debugging info. And even though I can't attach a debugger to the live cloud instance, I can pull IntelliTrace logs down and go through a debugging session in Visual Studio. It's incredibly helpful for debugging. All right. And that's it. I mean, I did a lot of talking, but I just did a couple choices. Oh, it's multi-instance. You shouldn't use web deploy for multi-instance. That's kind of a limitation today. We'll hit publish. And now we're going to push that off into the cloud. Under the covers, what we're doing is we're building all the tiers of your app. We're putting that into a CS pack, which is the unit of setup and deployment for Windows Azure. We're uploading that to Windows Azure through service management. We're making sure all your certificates are in check. And then Azure takes your app, and it models all the environments that you need. So in this case, I'm going to get four instances or four virtual machines spun up for this application to handle the incoming traffic. Nice thing, VS does this all kind of asynchronously. You can look in the activity log, and you actually have all the info you need from a support standpoint to see how long things are taking, to see if there's any problems with the deployment. Another thing, you know, kind of like deployment and forward in the life cycle is to get really comfortable with the portal. That'll be really handy to look at any of your services that are deployed. You can get metrics and monitoring and on the dashboard. You can look at particular instances. You can actually swap the VIPs. So you can have things in staging and swap them right into production. And we talked about, you know, things are configurable post-deployment, so I can actually change my monitoring verbosity, retention. I can change those app settings that I had because I put them in CSConfig. As a DevOps person, I can just go ahead and change them right here and make that quick change. I can scale up. I can scale down. I can change, you know, if a database goes down, you can change the string. So it really will give you that kind of management capability. And everything you see here and more, you can also do through REST APIs or PowerShell. So you guys can really customize and automate the process for that kind of more mature sort of lifecycle process. So that was a hugely long demo. Let's come back to slides for a sec. So we built and deployed an N-tier custom service that deployed that customized the operating system, that did back-end work, that worked with queues and storage. So pretty cool stuff. Kind of a few just tips and tricks to keep in mind. There are a few differences between the emulator and real Azure. I kind of think the emulator is better at finding functional issues than it is integration issues. And you know, a number of differences might be kind of between the user identity. Like we ran in IIS Express, which will be run as our user, but you have to think about what the identity might be in the cloud, which could be network service. But it does, you know, again, help us with that multi-config, multi-instance behavior. And I have some notes for you guys to take home about kind of the key lines of code and config that we looked at. In terms of publishing, we use that publish settings file to import to get into Windows Azure. That actually is your credentials to Windows Azure, so save the file in a safe place or just delete it. It is a unit of sharing for team scenarios, so you guys could have like one team admin download the file, and that could be one that an entire dev team uses. It's kind of a best practice. You get 25 of the certificates. After that, Windows Azure asks you to delete some and free some up. Let's talk about diagnostics and troubleshooting. Some of the basics that you guys should have in your tool belt. So there's remote desktop. You saw in Visual Studio, we can RDP into any of our PaaS or IaaS instances. Really helpful for looking at logs, perf counters, things like that. There's Windows Azure Diagnostics. I'm going to hold on that today, and that's really covered tomorrow in Windows Azure Cloud Services Advanced. So please check that one out. And then I'll show you IntelliTrace in just a second in a demo. So let's peek back over here. So a quick scenario that I want to show you. Let's kind of shift gears. Let's imagine, hey, you know, we're all on the road, right? Or many of us are on the road. And your pager goes off, or you get a bang mail in your email, and you've got a problem. And you look in your email, and there's some bug, something, one of your developers having a problem with some change that went in, and they can't figure it out. It's some spooky kind of issue happening in Windows Azure. So what do we do? Well, let's go to the portal. And what I've done here, actually to save time for myself, is I've spun up a virtual machine from an image that actually has all of my dev tools and has my enlistment into my Visual Studio Team Foundation Service source depot. How did I get the DevTools on there? I used my MSDN account. I put the ISO on there. I had my own license. So I just installed and configured it. And I think that's, with IaaS VMs, that's kind of the game. Like, you can either manually configure it, or you could have your favorite remote automation configure. Yep. Yes, you can. So there's the question is, can you clone something you've already manually configured? The IaaS virtual machines has the concept of disks in images. So what you would do is take a VM that you like. You can say create image, create as image. That'll actually save it. And then you can use that as a template to spin up new virtual machine instances. So it's kind of like an AMI sort of scenario. It works real well. In fact, that's what I actually do. I save, because I don't want this beefy dev machine thing running all the time. So I save it as an image, and then I spin it up on demand. So pretty cool. Visual Studio actually running in the cloud. Now I'm going to debug the cloud with it. So if I go to Server Explorer, I can see the instances that I have running in the compute container. If I'm in the Team Explorer, I can grab my enlistment. I can get latest to make sure I have the latest source code. I can look in Team Foundation Service, and I can see the bug. So there's some kind of controller error with the new mock. So that's the bug that I want to fix. And what I can do is I can right-click on one of my instances. And if I've enabled IntelliTrace, all I need to do is just say, View IntelliTrace Logs. And the agent that's actually sitting up in Azure will kind of stop things. It'll suck down all the instrumentation data and logging data that you need, debugging info. It'll put it into Windows Azure storage, and then we'll plumb it down to Visual Studio so you can actually have that cloud debugging scenario. Pretty cool. This has a little bit of latency because I've had this thing instrumenting for probably 2 or 3 hours. So it'll be a big log. I could do a cooking show trick. So we could open a file. I did save a report. I had a feeling I'd run low on time. And this is basically what you get. This is an IntelliTrace log. And I can very quickly see the exceptions list that I have. I'm seeing a few things I don't like, but I really don't like this directory not found exception. And whenever I see that, I kind of think, my code took some dependency on the file system. That file system isn't there by the time it got provisioned in Azure. I probably have a bug in my code. And that makes me kind of think, well, this file, I use this file to actually upload data into Mongo. If that file or folder didn't exist by the time the thing was provisioned, it's going to crash basically trying to access that folder. What I would do now is remote desktop in, make sure that that file isn't there, and that would kind of help me figure out the bug where, and I do this all the time, the build action should have been set to content on this file, which actually puts it into the bin folder, which lets it get picked up by the build process, and off you go. So debugging in the cloud for a cloud service remotely. Pretty cool. All right. One other thing I want to point out, we won't have time for a demo, but there is continuous delivery. So that, I guess I can take 10 seconds and talk about here. I do have a build definition set up for this TFS depot. And so you can automatically connect your cloud services to Team Foundation service. And every check-in and every build, or you can have a rolling build, will produce a real deployment in Windows Azure. So we'll help you get that mature process. Also, you can use this for on-prem TFS installations as well. And we have a white paper on how to take this workflow and install it on-premise so you can take advantage of it there. So one thing to be aware of. And that really brings us to the end. So we really want to summarize that with cloud services, you have the platform you need for these N-tier, most flexible applications, whether that's connected via endpoints or connected via queues. Visual Studio gives you the highest quality development experience and the tools you need to build and diagnose your cloud services.